And continuing all this discussion about tsunamis and typhoons and other natural disasters, as countries and organisations scramble to deliver aid and money to the Philippines, the massive scale of the devastation has prompted warnings for aid agencies not to repeat some of the mistakes they made in the relief effort for the Indian Ocean tsunami back in 2004. That disaster killed about 275,000 people. It destroyed entire communities in Indonesia, Sri Lanka, India and Thailand, and expect a myriad of problems in the delivery of global aid, expose those problems. So what are the lessons? Well, Martin Mulligan has a fair idea. He spent 5 years looking at the post-tsunami recovery in Sri Lanka and southern India for AusAid. He's an associate professor at the Global Urban and Social Studies Centre at RMIT. Martin Mulligan, good morning. Welcome to Breakfast.
Good morning, Fran.
Martin, the lessons from the tsunami recovery, there are many, I'm sure, but what's the key ones in your view?
The events in the Philippines are sadly reminiscent of what I witnessed in Sri Lanka. This is going to be it's a very big disaster, I believe, affecting over 9 million people in one way or another. It's going to be a long and slow recovery. We have to distinguish between the relief effort, and I think the world is pretty good at relief these days. There'll be a very well-coordinated international relief effort, and I'm sure that'll be pretty effective. But once that's over and once this is out of the news, then the really long-term problems set in, and we have to then avoid haste and waste that we saw in Sri Lanka. We need to take a much more careful approach to how the money that is raised is used carefully to make sure that people's needs are genuinely met and that we don't waste the money and divide communities by giving some people aid and not to other people. So I think we need to raise as much money as possible now, but it shouldn't all be spent quickly. Once the relief is under control, we really then have to take a much more careful approach to how to start the longer-term recovery process.
And it's difficult, isn't it, I suppose, to get people to slow down and not rush because the need is so urgent and so great. We just heard the Philippine ambassador there tell us at least 179,000 houses have been demolished, and I'm sure the number will be much, much higher than that. People need shelter. There is a degree of urgency in delivering shelter and delivering clean water and trying to get economies and communities sustainable.
Look, it is a complicated situation. It's a difficult message to proceed carefully. Of course, the relief has to be done as quickly and effectively as possible. People have to be made safe and comfortable. The fear factor has to be reduced. Then you have to put people into fairly good temporary shelter because they could be there for quite some time. But yes, the message then has to be to the aid organisations, to the community giving, the world community giving money, that it's far better to be careful about how the recovery process then proceeds so that the disaster won't cause ongoing social conflict and problems. And that's where we need to really slow things down and make sure that the money, whatever money is raised, is used very well and effectively. Because what we must learn here is that we're in a part of the world where there are so many poor and vulnerable communities exposed to these kind of extreme weather events. And we have to be very good at doing the relief and the recovery work very effectively and make sure that we avoid the mistakes that were made after the tsunami.
And one of the lessons or the mistakes, however you want to phrase it, out of the tsunami was the number of aid agencies on the ground and the way they work or don't work together. You call for a more considered and coordinated approach. I mean, in Sri Lanka, there were 898 agencies involved post-tsunami. 353 of them were not Sri Lankan in origin. It's a big ask to try and get coordination. Is the problem there's too many aid agencies in there at these times? What do you do about that?
It's inevitably rather chaotic after a bit like this, and the communications go down, the infrastructure is badly damaged. It's very hard to coordinate things, and you do need an international response. This is beyond the capacity of any nation, any local community to respond. You have to have a big global effort.
Sure.
And there will be mistakes made. That's inevitable. But, of course, we can learn from the past. We can realise that we need to coordinate things very well at the local and regional levels. We have to have a very clear plan, assessment of needs. We have to make sure that people work together. We also have to let the people who give money know to expect that this will take some time, not to be impatient about getting quick results because there ends up being competition between the agencies that go in there. So you need this big, massive response to such unprecedented disasters, and sadly we know there's going to be more frequent and more intense extreme weather events in our region. So you need a big response, but clearly you need to have proper coordination, proper needs assessment, and really the eye to a long-term and careful and cautious recovery.
One of your conclusions after in the work you did after the tsunami, and I stress it was 5 years of work and it's been published in a book, is some kind of specialist agency within perhaps the structures of the UN to try and coordinate the aid response, the immediate aid response, and get some logic and coordination to it. But again, it's got a sense where there might be just another added bureaucracy to what's already there.
Well, yes, these things are possible. But my concern is we do forget. We don't remember the lessons. We don't look at the best studies. There's a big turnover in this field of people coming and going. And we can lose the memory of what we've learned from past experiences. And so somehow or other, we do need to have a repository, both perhaps globally and also in the various nations where we do a lot of this kind of work. I'm very concerned. This is not a good time for Australia to be cutting its aid budget, for Australia to be going through a major restructure of the AusAid agency, which has accumulated knowledge, experience and expertise. Not a good time to be doing this. And sadly, for budget cut reasons, we are cutting back on our expertise in this area. So certainly, we do need to spend a little bit of our time and money on making sure we don't avoid mistakes of the past. In the long run, that'll be effective. But the best studies, the best understandings, the best lessons need to be distilled. They need to be kept, made available to people who are on the ground doing this work, because often they're new people to the field, and we must make sure that the collective memory is not lost.
And Martin, just another couple of points out of your report, your review. You talk about the extent to which an influx of aid can open up pre-existing fault lines, and if aid agencies come in, they don't understand the tensions within communities, the divisions, they can play into those. I guess that's by building houses for some and not others, others benefiting from aid and not others. You talk about a geography of vulnerability, and you say that's not the same thing as a geography of hazard. What's a geography of vulnerability?
Well, what we know is that these events really affect people who tend to live in, you know, flimsy housing, few resources for themselves. These are rather poor communities. In some ways, they're very resilient people. They know how to deal with crises, but they have few resources and they tend to lose everything in a disaster, including, of course, family members. And so that's when there's a great deal of trauma, and they are people who have to compete in one some way or another to survive. And so it's easy to set off these kind of tensions and conflicts within such traumatized communities, and any community in the world has its own divisions, be it around ethnic or religious lines or whatever, which can easily open up in times of stress and crisis. And so in Sri Lanka, the outcomes were very patchy. In some areas, the very poorly thought out distribution of aid actually contributed to conflict and tension and division. And some people were left in terrible situations, isolated, alone, without social networks. And so that's where we're arguing for a community development approach which really understands the local conditions, the local geographies, and the local social conditions, the nature of the community. And unless you've got that kind of detailed local knowledge and work it through and consult people carefully and make sure that people don't get anxious or feeling angry about the way that aid is being delivered, unless you do that very carefully, you could actually make things worse for people and cause tension, conflict and even political problems.
And Martin, just briefly and finally, really to go back to where we started in terms of the haste of it all post-disaster, after the tsunami and also after Haiti, there was talk of the UN mantra was build it back better. Has that happened?
Look, build back better comes up all the time. That's the rhetoric. And there is an opportunity, of course, to address some pre-existing vulnerabilities, the fact that some of these people are living in places where they are very exposed to hazard. And it's possible, and certainly in Sri Lanka there are some examples, but not many, of where this was achieved, where a thoughtful process did end up putting people in better housing, better locations, with better access to livelihoods. But often that was not the case. That was very rare. So the possibility is there. It can be done, and it should happen more often. So it just needs a much more patient approach. It's not rocket science. You simply need to be patient, need to be careful, talk to a lot of people, take your time and make sure that everybody is included and the social needs of people are well and truly understood so that the aid is delivered effectively and well targeted.
It's not rocket science, but it's always happening at times of such great stress and duress. Martin Mulligan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Fran.
Associate Professor Martin Mulligan, he spent 5 years investigating the recovery effort after the tsunami which hit Sri Lanka in December and other places, of course, in 2004. You're listening to RM Breakfast. It's 16 minutes to 9.